Hello, welcome to Not a Big Deal, the podcast aimed to make first-time marketing leaders feel less alone. I'm Kelly, here with Lucy. We're back after our little summer hiatus. Hey, Lucy.
Hello. It was an impromptu summer hiatus of me thinking getting married, working, and doing the podcast was going to be feasible. Didn't happen. So we're back, both married women. That's the final thing we'll talk about, weddings from now on. It's going to be straight marketing from now on.
Marketing all day, business all day. That's all we do, you know?
That's actually all we care about now. How's your couple of weeks off been?
It's been good. I've been, for August, it's not as common as, you know, in Europe to have lots of people working. A lot of my team has had some holidays, so I've been covering. So I wouldn't say it's been a chill August work-wise, but it's been a very nice August. It's finally feeling like summer weather. I have to talk about the weather or it wouldn't be a podcast.
It wouldn't be this podcast. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm California girl, love some sunshine. So that's filling my cup. Other than that, it's been pretty low key.
I would always, August always gives me the heebie-jeebies with work because I find August similar to December of work. Like, actually, you kind of want to feel like you're like back, ready to launch stuff in September. Like, you work towards August knowing that, okay, you might have like a little bit of like everyone's on holiday, it's a bit more of a down period. And then I always have this like slight anxiety of like September, right, we're back with a bang, we need stuff launched because I've only got 3 months to make an impact.
I completely agree. And I think what that means, well, I don't know if other roles feel this, but definitely for marketing, it means that August is not chill.
No, August is not chill. It's not fun. Also, no. I find that within that, I always say in marketing that you probably shouldn't launch stuff in December, or like the companies I've worked at haven't had a reason to really talk in December. But have you had the same, that December is always my like prep month?
Yes, I think right until Christmas is kind of prep because then you know it's just going to be silent. And yeah, exactly. You don't want to do any, you're not doing dinners. Maybe you'll do like a webinar the first week, but it's otherwise, you're everyone live their best lives and don't try to sell to them.
Exactly. And if you want to try and sell, you better be ready to spend some serious marketing cash because everyone is trying to like, I guess it's a lot of like e-commerce stuff, which we don't generally do.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I find December, you're right. December and August are the two quiet months, but it's like we're about to enter a very tight period. We have to cram everything in for the rest of the calendar year.
If you want to make some impact, it's September, October, November, baby, and that's it. So anyway, that's nice. Nice way to get everybody in a good mood.
So now that everyone's nice and freaked out, we're going to talk about prioritizing. Maybe that's good.
Yeah.
It's actually a very good time because you might be having a lot of conflicting asks, you know. Before we jump in, how are you? I want to make sure we cover you, our newlywed.
I feel that the theme of this podcast is that you always say you're good and we'll go through the podcast and you'll say, actually, I'm stressed about something. And I'll always start the podcast saying I'm anxious or stressed about something. I'm working on a project at the moment.
Huh? I have to warm up, you know, before I'm too
long. I'm very hot on the sleeve.
I love it.
And so, yeah, I'm feeling a little bit anxious. I think we're just about to do a new website launch. And I think it always makes me a little nervous. You don't really know what's going to go wrong tech-wise. There's always like bits and pieces, right? You have to like resort out all the tracking and all of that kind of stuff, which isn't my favorite things. But
yeah,
I'm excited to get it live and test it and see how it's going. So a mix of apprehension, let's say.
That makes sense.
And slight anxiety.
Yeah, combined with like a healthy dose of a little post-wedding come down. So,
which is just great.
Everything's fine, but not actually.
But actually, when we were chatting through the show about prioritization, I felt like this really actually helped me. Me and Kelly got very inspired and tried to come up with a whole table of how we think we can help you. We felt like, okay, this episode is actually very useful. So I felt like, okay, my brain is, I have some useful stuff going on still.
Yeah, she's still got it. Don't worry.
My brain is not completely numb from Google Analytics yet.
I mean, it will happen if you stay in there too long. So I think you just need to launch.
True. Okay, so let's chat prioritization. Let's start with maybe a little bit of how we felt around prioritization, especially you've always got like your big company startup vibe. So I'd love to know actually for you at Salesforce, what was prioritization like there?
That is a very good question. I think that at such a big company, I don't know, you're sort of like in the flow. Like you're not usually breaking a status quo. And that's actually ultimately why I left, was I loved it, but I got a little bored. It was very predictable every year. So I think like if things are going well, then nothing really changes at a big company. Yeah. Like you have a much bigger team. Everyone has set roles. Like a campaign manager knows what content they need. So I think the biggest prioritization, I guess, especially it's also different working at Salesforce in outside of the US, because you get a lot from the US given to you basically, and that's what you're supposed to do. So it's more like product launch stuff or seasonal events. I think the biggest thing that I prioritized was a big project where we switched from product-led to industry-led. And so that was a big deviation. But I think otherwise, at a big company, yeah, it's less making net new priorities and more you're sort of a part of – I'm such a visual person. I always think of – you're almost like on a train. Like I think right now at Meter, the train is like we think it's on the right track. It's like slowly warming up and moving, whereas at a company like Salesforce – the train is much faster. So it's like, you're not going to deviate too much.
Yeah. You're on it.
But did that help?
Yeah, no. I think that's a good way of explaining it. Because that I think is how I also felt with the head of marketing. If we keep the train metaphor going, exactly what you're saying, it's going to be some bumps in the tracks also. And a lot of like, do I do this or this? Like there's a lot of, decisions to be made around that. And so that's exactly how I found it at startups, is the tracks aren't set. And so you're always trying to figure out what's going to work best to be able to kind of get that train going. Well, we can really hammer this train.
Yeah. I have like a full visual of this. Yeah. I think, and I love what you're saying about that there, you know, sometimes you'll come into a fork in the road and if you pick left, there's no wrong choice. Like no one knows, and just know that you're going to get another opportunity in the not too distant future to pick another path. And that's sort of how you go to just keep figuring out what works. And I think that's actually something I've really loved, actually, is a bit of the unknown and the getting to figure it out and the getting to build. And I just think there is no wrong answer. You're just, anything is better than nothing. Progress over perfection. Mm-hmm. Salesforce is definitely more perfection. I think that's what's fun, but it does also make it hard to figure out what to do. How do you not make sure you're changing tracks too often? We're just going to keep going with this, you know, and then your team's kind of exhausted by it. So I think that's why I'm really excited to talk about this today, is how at a startup do you prioritize? And when you're building something new, what is your gut versus data versus what other people are telling you? And I think it's a big topic.
Mm. So maybe then let's start with what we were finding was like, well, what are the problems with prioritization specifically within marketing, which is stuff we've already touched on before. Like there's so many opportunities, there's so many things you can be doing. And there's, I think always like marketing is a very subjective role. And so actually what you also get is a lot of like input and thoughts and, external, but internally, like, oh, do you think we should be doing this or should we be doing this? And I think everybody sees it as quite like an easy thing to turn on and off. And sometimes in like a really nice way to also be helpful and try and suggest stuff. But a lot of the time that can like distract you or find it quite hard to know like what is the most important things. And I definitely had that experience when I first started at Recce. Like, everyone was super excited that they were having this marketing department. And so what that meant is I got so much input that I found it really hard to know, right, where's my gut? What do I think we should be doing? And I think, like you've said before, like if you have some predefined stuff within the company with marketing, like how do you know what you should carry on with and not, is also, I think, quite tricky.
Yeah, because you could also have a situation where you don't have tons of input and it's like, what do you think? Tell us where to go. And you're like, whoa, we could go in so many directions. How do I even begin? Like, and I think it depends really on the stage your company is at. Like you said, what's already in place for marketing? Do you have any idea of what's working versus not? Because if you're starting seed round from scratch, that's going to look very different from a later stage company. But yeah, like you said, there's so many opinions to take in. And even if you don't have those, either way, you're having to sort of like put your blinders on a bit and figure out, what do we do?
Also, I don't know if you ever found this, but within the prioritization, the more I was at Recce, and so I'd come in with like all the ideas, all the stuff, but like it does gradually, like your kind of pool gets smaller, like try different things and you get to a place where you kind of understand what the goals are and what you want to do. I also found that sometimes not having very clear goals would like block me. So I would know, if I wasn't able to prioritize and really have a story about what we were doing, I would feel really blocked at not knowing, like, actually, what should I be doing? Like, what's helping the team? What's helping the company? Because like, I can kind of set the prioritizations for everybody else, but I needed this kind of like larger strategy that I could keep repeating in meetings. And I found if I didn't have that, I felt really lost.
Yeah, that's a bit like an episode we've done in the past on internal selling, like building the marketing reputation is you're sort of defending your position, not your position in your actual role, but like what you guys are doing. You're sort of always selling it, basically. Mm. Another thought that sort of came to my mind as you were talking is, it's also like being realistic with what you can do with a small team. Like the phrase that came to mind that I don't actually love is doing more with less. Yeah. I don't love it because I think that it makes you feel like if you have a smaller team, you should be like taking on maybe more than you can, or like, wow, Gen AI is going to allow us to do so much more, so much quicker. So increase your workload by 20%, baby, because it's all smooth sailing now.
And you're just super agile because you're small.
Yeah, exactly. I just think I've learned to give myself a lot more grace. Like sometimes I'm guilty of putting like 10 things on a to-do list for myself in a single day. And then at the end being like, oh my God, I'm a failure. Like, why can't I get anything done? And it's actually like, I was super unrealistic with what I thought I could achieve today, or with how long these things are. Like when you're starting things from scratch, it takes so much longer than you think, especially if you're trying to do a good job.
No, and the brain, for me, I think also being productive is such like a, like it gives me like, I don't know, obviously it gives you dopamine, but like my worth is so closely linked to how productive I am that I look back and I'm like, wait, but when I was in my 20s, like I'd be so productive. I'd have a list and be able to tick it off. And I'm like, that's because I had a manager who was making sure I could do that. Why now? Obviously, yeah. As a head of marketing, you don't have a manager that manages you that closely. Yeah. But I'd be like, oh, why can't I prioritize? Why can't I be as productive as I? And I'm like, well, I barely got anything done because like something would come in or someone would need something. Like that's being a manager. But that really took me a long time to like feel that I was doing a good job because my job just felt so scattered in some way.
Yeah. So interesting. I was out to dinner with my old team at Salesforce, mm-hmm. and one of them had left to go to a startup and ended up being like kind of a bust. And he was like, there was no strategy. Like I was super bored. We never knew what we were doing. And then another woman on my team who'd left Salesforce and we're now working together, she was like, yeah, Kelly, like you set the strategy for us at Meter. Like, and I was like, oh yeah, I do. Like, I was like, well, I'm sorry, you're not experiencing any boredom that Alex might have experienced somewhere else. But it's such a subtle thing, but it's like, that is how you're seen as the leader. It's like you are the one sort of telling your team where to go, what to do, how to spend their time. And like you said, no one, you can get like feedback from above you, but it's on you to sort of try to see what's happening.
For sure.
Yeah.
So let's then go into the kind of structure that we found could help someone first time head of marketing or head of marketing. I probably would have found this helpful 2 years in. So let's go through. So we kind of broke it up. We'll actually put the table. We'll share it on social anyway, but like on our LinkedIns. But maybe we can try and link out to it somewhere on the show notes. But we, Kelly and I, kind of started to put this table together, or like steps together of how we think you could start prioritization for you and your team. And so the first thing that sounds maybe really simple, or am I putting it down? But I definitely, I've said it in a previous episode, didn't do this or didn't feel confident enough to probably ask this as much as I did towards the end, was understanding really what the company goals are. Like, okay, if it's revenue, what does that mean? Like, is that then is X amount of revenue and we need to get like really high quality customers that are spending a lot of money? Or is it that we need like as many customers as possible with a minimum spend of XYZ? Like, I needed to get an idea of, okay, it's not just this number. Also, like, what is the product aimed to like be able to do? What are their goals at the moment to be able to like, what are they foreseeing the customers that we've got doing? And sometimes I couldn't get those answers, but in general, I think like asking those questions, trying to get a bit more understanding around like what are those key points within a goal, a monetary goal, was like per customer, was super helpful for me.
Yeah. I think even if you don't have that, like if the company goal, again, if you're earlier stage, might be to get 10 new customers, one and onboarded and live. And that might be what your entire company is like marching behind. Like it can even be simple things like that. Just like you need to know what that goal is. And then we'll dive into like, you know, how you use that. But I think, yeah, I love what you said. It's like, one, if you can connect to revenue, because it's always best to be close to money if you can. But if you are earlier stage and you're maybe not as concerned about revenue right now, it could even just be like a customer goal or something else you and I had said is like, what's keeping your CEO up at night? Maybe you don't even have company goals. Every company is run differently, but you can ask your CEO or whoever you report to, like, what is keeping you up at night? Like, what are you most worried about? Or where do you see the biggest opportunities for me to have an impact? That could be another way too.
Because I also think that's a really good point, because actually when I say company goals, it sounds like they're already kind of structured. Whereas actually when I was diving into what the company goal was, exactly like you say, it was me speaking to the CEO and being like, what's the thing, what's the number you're looking at the moment where you see success or not? Like, it wasn't that I was getting like sent monthly like company goals every so often. Yeah.
Because they're the ones like presenting to the board. So they know what matters most, what they're getting the most heat on, what's being most scrutinized. And so if you can align yourself behind them, then it's a good place to start.
Yeah, agreed. And then we started, so from those goals, we then started to look at like, okay, realistically, where can marketing impact? Because obviously you're not going to be able to like help with every single, you should always be aligned, but it's unrealistic to feel like the full pressure from that goal. So realistically, where can you have impact within that? I guess that's quite open-ended actually. Have we got an example of?
No, I like that. Like, I mean, I can use an example from my role. So like one of our company goals is to create a repeatable go-to-market motion. It's the number one company goal. And so my role within that is I'm not a seller. So I'm not going to, you know, pick up sales. That's, I have peers that do that. My job is more, I'm like, okay, pipeline, that's a part of that. I play a piece in the pipeline puzzle. What would that look like? And then that sort of became then my team's priority is helping to generate pipeline, exploring new channels. Are we going to market in the right way? That's sort of a way to think about it. Does that help?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I think like just basically joining the dots between the overall CEO goals and then where you can impact with marketing is basically what we're saying in this stage.
Yeah. It's like create a trickle down.
Yeah. And then for me, what I felt was like the most impactful thing with prioritization is this feeling of like giving you the why. So I think from then having these overall goals into then where can marketing impact, you then start to be able to define this narrative between like what you're doing and then like creating goals for it or whatever. But really having this thing that you could just continuously repeat to anyone who will listen, in all hands, to your boss, to any senior people in the company, anyone that would give me a suggestion that might distract me, I would, even before that, like to go with a plan and be like, hey, this is what we're doing for the next quarter, 2 quarters. Like, realistically, at a startup, you're doing quarterly, if not monthly. But it would be that I could just repeat it in every meeting of what we were doing. Like, I would over-communicate that prioritization, because then what I found, which before I would have found distracting and difficult to prioritize, would be a lot of input on marketing and what we were doing. And once I'd had this plan, I realized people would really back off because they'd be like, right, they're on it. I don't need to be suggesting stuff or kind of pushing a marketing idea or a narrative that I think we should be doing. It was like, then people kind of had confidence in me of like, right, she knows what she's doing and she's on it. And that for me was like, it felt like it took like the pressure off to some degree. Like it made things a lot clearer to be able to just keep repeating it everywhere.
Yeah, I think you're really good at this. It's something I've definitely learned from you. I have actually 2 follow-up questions for you on the why and building your narrative. The first is, you've mentioned before in the past, like sort of how you've used like customer data or customer interviews to help back your why. Can you talk a little bit about how you've used that?
It's something you always put me in this situation where you are like learning from me, but it's definitely not the case. Don't ask you follow-up questions, apparently. So when I started at Recce, we didn't really have any data in terms of marketing. Well, any kind of marketing data in terms of like paid or kind of a template of this is X many people who come through onboarding. Da, da, da. So we basically made this big marketing dashboard, which meant that I would understand where people were converting, what was the best channels we were using, and what it meant I could do internally if if something was challenged or we were able to talk about it, would be I'd be able to say like, oh no, the data backs this thing up, or I'd be able to refer to it with goals that were going forward. One thing that I found also in the company was actually they would speak to customers a lot, and so anecdotes would really help with the why in terms of prioritization. So we went and did a big load of research with customers in person around what features they were really valuing, and that helped. Actually, what that helped us do is prioritize our messaging. But what it also did was meant I basically had this bank of knowledge of being able to explain why we were doing things. So although it was anecdotal to maybe one customer, I'd always make sure that the kind of anecdote and the data would match. But it would mean that I could explain, okay, this person said this and we can see this in the data, and therefore that's why we're doing this. And so actually having, once you've kind of gone through the steps of what we've said, of like, you've got your goals, you worked out why, how marketing can have an impact and why that's important, I felt these like sprinkling of data or sprinkling of anecdotes really helped to bring it to life, to like back up what we were doing.
I love that. I think that makes so much sense. That's a way to build your why, is with data and with customer stuff. That's always going to win.
Okay.
Another question, and maybe we'll cover this as we go through sort of this format we've developed, but is when, I know we've talked a bit about like how to not have blinders, but like apply a filter to other people's opinions, so that you can listen sort of to your gut. But I do think a piece that is important is getting buy-in. And so you don't want to just do your why in isolation or pick your priorities in isolation. So I guess another question for you is, how did you balance like buy-in versus input, if those two make sense. Like getting your CEO to be like, yes, I agree with your priorities, versus input where he's like, what about this? And you're sort of defending. Like, how do you get buy-in?
Yeah, probably more at the start. I'm going to ask you this question back, by the way. At the start, you have to create trust with your CEO or your boss. I think it's kind of two-sided, right? To some degree, as a manager, someone coming to you and saying, I've listened to the problems and I've worked out what to do is like the ideal scenario. You're like, great, you're on it. I trust you. Yeah. I'm going to challenge you with some stuff. But if you trust someone, that's great.
Yeah.
What I did find is like maybe after a board meeting or like at the end of the year, there would be stuff where my boss would come to me and say, I want to kind of change this direction to some degree. What I would do then is go away and work out my why to see, okay, can I sell this? Is weird, but like, can I apply the goals, the marketing, the data, the anecdotes? Like, do I believe that this is also the best direction? Not to necessarily go back and challenge, but to basically, I think that was the kind of relationship we had, but sometimes it'd be like, okay, you can give me what you think, but I needed to also believe it, I think, for it to work properly.
Yeah, I agree. No, that makes a ton of sense.
But what about you?
Sorry. Yeah, I think some of this I also wonder, like, is it company culture influenced as well? But I think for me, at least, I definitely want buy-in from the two co-founders. One's has a CEO role and one's a CRO role. And so I think the CEO role will help me think about things that I might be missing or to actually help me say no. Whereas the CRO, because marketing and sales work so closely together, I really want to make sure that he agrees with where we're putting marketing effort and that sales effort and marketing effort are aligned. So he has to know what we're doing. So I think to me, those are the two that I do want buy-in from. And maybe it's not even, is it buy-in or is it just that you're sort of doing like a roadshow of your priorities that people know? It's kind of both, I guess. I think sometimes I will also get buy-in from the team. I think it's sort of deciding when you need that versus when you're telling them. And then actually another, I would say, role that I've gotten buy-in from is actually an external mentor. So I'll go to someone who I trust who's either like a experienced CMO or another kind of startup marketing leader and be like, what do you think about this? Oh, another person is in your VC, if you have VC investment, like sometimes they have resources, but is like, what do you think? What am I missing? Like, what are the blind spots you've seen other companies like us experience? And that I feel like helps make me be a bit more sophisticated in how I approach things. Like if I'm a first time in this role, if you have someone that's done it before, then they help you see what you might not see.
Yeah.
So short, long answer, but short answer is I do think there's a balance of sort of getting buy-in, this little roadshow, but also being confident. And there's a couple people you can do either of those with.
For sure. Is this then a good like segue into the prioritization? Because obviously you're going to have this huge, you should have this narrative which starts to then help you have this story of what you're telling, of what you're doing. But I do also think there's like this practical thing of then going to your team and being like, based on these goals, what are we pausing? Like, and I think that maybe actually with the buy-in of what you're saying, that's kind of what you're doing. You're saying, hey, yeah, I've got this narrative and this goal of what I think we should be doing and the why. And like, now I'm going to go to these people and say, do you agree? Part one. And part two, what should we be stopping? What should we be pausing? Is everybody aligned that is the prioritization of where we're going? And really, I think that's the crux of how you start to get focus again.
I like that. I think maybe you're right. That's when you bring your team in, is you're setting the goal because you know it's aligned to company. Now it's on the more tactical side. What do you guys think will move the needle on this agreed upon goal? I really like that.
And what can we add? Like, let's make it collaborative. I think also with the with like senior people and in your team, like from this goal, like you're saying, where are the gaps? What more could we do? Is there something I'm missing? I think are the great questions that then help you to really have the kind of high level stuff, which then means you can break down projects and what everyone should be doing for that month or quarter.
Yeah, I agree. Another thing I've learned, I think more in the last year, is you touched on this earlier, is that you will not be planning for the year. Things change too much. Even quarterly, I try to do, and that's can be hard depending on where your company is. And so I think it's just also a bit of it is preparing your team that, like, buckle up. We are learning a lot and things will change. And that's the nature of being at a startup or an early stage company. And we've shifted now to do more monthly planning. Maybe it's every 2 months, but just like looking at exactly like you said, what's in flight? Are our goals still aligned to where the company is? What's working? What's not? What have we done? Look at the analytics and keep moving on. And I think that's just been a big learning, is I was so used to Salesforce. We did yearly planning. And so I thought quarterly was even like, oh my God, she's so agile. Like, watch out, world. And now I'm actually like, no, it needs to be monthly. And even in within the month, if you're like, cut that, it's not working, that's okay too. Like, you got to like abandon things quickly if you don't have time or you overcommitted or it's not working. That's all okay.
And I think that's where the this kind of like narrative, rather than it being this like very strict, like, this is what we're doing and this is, here's a spreadsheet and da, 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 like actually having this thing which you can explain in quite a fluid way actually does give you a lot of kind of grace when stuff starts to move, like, oh, okay, the prioritization was this and the goal was this. We've started to see that actually over the last 2 months, we want to now move into the, like, I was always trying to kind of like nod back to what we were doing and then go forward, rather than it being this like very rigid calendar led, like I could never quite get there in terms of organization.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's letting yourself be fluid.
Yeah.
Another part of this pyramid that we actually haven't discussed, so I'm going to drop something on you, is there a next step, which is like metrics or like measuring? Like, how are you? It feels like it's like the arrow's going back to the top. Are you moving the needle on that company initiative? How do you know if you are? I think you guys did a monthly metrics review, or how did you manage that within your team, or how do you see other companies that you work with do it?
Yeah, we would do a data review every month. And that would, like, everything that people were working on was like somehow linked to data. And so then I'd always ask the team to present like that data section and explain. So yeah, I probably would have overall prioritizations, then break it down into like projects. And then people would always report on the project. I'd always try and make someone a lead of that project, and then they'd report back that. But yeah, I'd always try and have a metric to get an idea of, okay, are we improving?
Yeah.
And what about you?
Yeah, we're doing something similar. I think right now the example I talked about earlier is still applicable, where we're trying to build a repeatable go-to-market motion. And so my team's goal is still pipeline. How do we source pipeline? And we actually are doing a weekly review right now, but just because we're trying to track where every lead is and opportunity and make sure we're understanding what's coming in. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it also is dependent on your initiative. Like right now, ours is weekly, but things may shift and then we go back to monthly, and that's actually enough. That gives us enough of a pulse to be able to see how we're trending.
I think also with pipeline, I mean, you should be looking at data every day.
Yeah. You're telling me I'm not doing enough?
No, not with your team. But I just think, like, I remember my boss, he'll love this shout out. My boss at Reki Renen, he was like, every morning when you come in, I want to walk past your screen and for you to be looking at, like, how many visitors we've had on the website, how many onboardings we had in the last 24 hours. Like, I want to be able to ask you that number and you know it. Like, that's the number you should care about. So he made my prioritization very easy.
He gave you your prioritization.
So maybe we should leave off here. I think this has been our most like advice-led podcast so far. We'll always say to people, give us some feedback. Do you like it? Don't you? We want to know.
Please.
Please.
I think we can see it at the end. We need to catch it at the beginning.
When people are
it on.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. This is a great chat. I think prioritizing is such a big conversation. And I actually think this framework and everything we're talked about is relevant beyond just marketing too. So hopefully it's helpful for everyone listening.